Hello, everyone. This is Sasha Ati, your host of the PCOS Challenge radio show and PCOSChallenge.com, the support and networking site for women with polycystic ovarian syndrome. Today, our show is about an integrative approach to wellness and fertility in PCOS. And our guest is Dr. Maureen Kelly. Maureen Kelly is a leading reproductive endocrinologist who has been treating women with PCOS in the Philadelphia area for over 20 years. Dr. Kelly is a longtime advocate of a holistic approach to treating PCOS. She is medical director of Society Hill Reproductive Medicine, a medical practice she founded specializing in women's endocrine fertility and gynecologic health. She also founded The Wellness, a wellness center which offers therapies such as nutrition counseling, therapy, and acupuncture, which has unique expertise in supporting women with PCOS. Dr. Kelly is an attending physician and surgeon at Pennsylvania Hospital and Thomas Jefferson University. She has garnered numerous honors, most recently including Vital's Patients' Choice Awards and Most Compassionate Doctor for 2014. Dr. Kelly, we are so glad, so happy to have you on the PCOS Challenge radio show. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. And kudos on your accolades for taking care of your patients and being a compassionate doctor. We need many, many more doctors like you helping women with PCOS. So tell us about polycystic ovary syndrome, how it impacts women and girls, and what the signs are if you may have PCOS.
Well, PCOS is a, as a general statement, it's a condition that affects a lot of systems within the body. We certainly recognize that it can cause some problems within many endocrine systems, but we also now recognize that it can also create some dysfunction in certain metabolism, systems of metabolism. So multiple different areas within the body are affected, and many of them are interrelated, and what we see in one area can definitely impact its expression through another system. Some of the most common presenting symptoms, which bring many women to their doctors, is that they may experience irregular menstrual cycles. So that's one of the leading features of it. But having said that, I also should mention that not all women will have all of the symptoms of PCOS. They may only have one or two, or they may think, well, I don't have PCOS because I have regular cycles. And that's not actually the case. There's other hints of it. We can see at times women will have some changes in their skin, like oily skin or acne. They can also have increased hair growth in different parts of their body. Some women will notice thinning of their hair as well. For some women, they have problems with weight. They may have a very sudden weight gain and not really explained by any increase in eating or decrease in exercise. And we can also note that some women and many women with PCOS will struggle with mood changes, anxiety, depression, infertility. So there's a large spectrum of, and as I mentioned, not all women will have all of those symptoms. And it makes it tough to diagnose it.
Right, right. I was going to say that there are many women who it takes years to get a diagnosis, and many doctors before they finally arrive at a diagnosis of PCOS. And it's potentially because of this constellation of symptoms that some doctors may not connect the dots, or you may see a gynecologist for one problem, your dermatologist for another problem. And if your physicians don't know about some of the other symptoms, they may not connect the dots. Is this correct?
That is correct. And I think that one thing that is certainly very well appreciated in recent years is the relationship among multiple endocrine systems, as well as the different systems of metabolism with PCOS. But I would venture to say that sometimes that's not the focus when a woman goes in to see her doctor and say she has irregular menstrual cycles. They may want to, even if they make the diagnosis causing the irregular menstrual cycles, they may not go further and explore the relationship with blood sugar, insulin, nutrition, exercise, other things that also are at play with PCOS. So they may just focus on, well, let's get your cycles regular or something along those lines, but without going into some of the larger conditions that are also part of the PCOS constellation.
So walk us through how, say, for instance, a gynecologist or a primary care physician will diagnose a woman or girl with polycystic ovary syndrome.
Yes. There is an accepted guidance for making the diagnosis of PCOS. And we recognize, and I will mention what it is, but before I say that, I will also mention that we know that it's also limited, that it's not a perfect definition. It is not a perfect way to diagnose PCOS. But at the moment, what we have is we have three criteria that need, and two of these three criteria need to be met for a woman to be diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome. So one of them would be a woman might experience irregular menstrual cycles. The second, ultrasound, her ovaries may have a unique appearance to them where many of their immature follicles, the small structures on the ovaries that contain immature eggs, they'll line up around the outer edge of the ovary. And that's something that is visible by ultrasound. So some women will have that appearance by ultrasound. The third criteria is some evidence of increased androgens, or what many people refer to as male-type hormones, although they are normal for a woman to have. But at higher levels, those androgens will create things like acne or oily skin or increased hair growth. And sometimes we're even able to register that in the bloodstream. So a woman doesn't have to have all three of those criteria. She just needs to have two of those three criteria.
Okay. And what about some of the other symptoms that aren't included in the diagnostic criteria, such as insulin resistance or anxiety and depression? Do physicians generally ask questions to figure out, or do tests to figure out whether or not women or girls are dealing with these as well?
So just because those symptoms are not part of the diagnostic criteria does not mean that they're not important. In fact, they're extremely important. I've had so many patients over the years when I mention to them some of the symptoms that they're experiencing that they've never tied in to their polycystic ovarian syndrome diagnosis or ever really thought it might be related to their irregular menstrual cycles. And I'll mention to them, you know, many women wake up fatigued in the morning, just, you know, having a hard time dragging themselves out of bed, or they might have a very suppressed appetite during the morning hours, or, you know, the kind of sensation of crashing a few hours after eating, or if one eats something, you know, sugary or something like that, they'll notice, you know, a quick reaction to that, those hypoglycemic symptoms. And so all of those are extremely important, even though they're not used to make that diagnosis, and they should be addressed. They should be explored fully because they are interrelated. Some of what we do to help with for example, if someone has a weight issue and we're involved with nutrition counseling, some of the other benefits we're going to see is that many times energy will improve. We will notice less feelings of crashing after eating. We'll also notice much better improvement with this overall skin, you know, decreasing acne, So the nutrition, even though initially it might be prompted by concerns about weight, it will have many, many, many beneficial effects for women with PCOS, including, you know, some alleviation of anxiety, depression. And so yes, we need to explore all of those symptoms, even though they're not really part of the diagnostic criteria.
I completely agree. And you are a reproductive endocrinologist, but you believe in a holistic approach to treating PCOS. First, can you and what your vision for a holistic approach to treating PCOS is?
Absolutely. Polycystic ovarian syndrome, a large feature, and what it is many times is defined as an endocrine disorder. So in the world of reproductive endocrinology, it is one of the most common things that we see. And you know, as you know, up to about 10% of all women have PCOS, if not more. And so it's very, very common. And because it does have an endocrine disorder component to it, many times a woman will be referred to us by her gynecologist to help with treatment and management, as well as the fact that it can also lead to problems with fertility, and reproductive endocrinologists treat infertility. And so again, many of our patients will be referred to us for fertility treatment, and one of the underlying cause or the underlying cause could be PCOS. When we started to appreciate the fact that PCOS is not just all about the endocrine system, and started to realize that there is a very strong relationship between insulin and blood sugar system with PCOS, it became critically important to try to focus on that aspect as well. So, for example, someone whose endocrine problems might lead to either an irregular menstrual cycle or hair growth, and we were trying to treat those things with medications, but never addressed the insulin resistance, we still would find that, you know, moods would fluctuate, energy would fluctuate, would increase dramatically. Women would have become very frustrated and have difficulty losing weight. So that feature also needs to be treated just as seriously as an irregular menstrual cycle or infertility. And as a result of that, I found over the years, many times I was referring patients to local nutritionists. There's also help with other things as well in terms of exercise, acupuncture, and I would find that I would be referring my patients to various practitioners around the Philadelphia area. And one day I realized I should be making it a lot easier for my patients. I need to, one, vet my own and have my own practitioners so that I know that my patients are seeing the best in the field, that the nutrition is such a key component to that. I needed to have a nutritionist right there for my patients to access and to have ongoing support from them as they might modify their diet. That's what led to integrating the wellness component with the treatment. So not just trying to use things like birth control pills to regulate the cycle and tell somebody that it would be a good idea if, they ate a certain way, but actually have a team right there for them to rely on.
Okay, that makes absolute so many of us, myself as a PCOS patient, we know that having to see so many different practitioners, and it's just very time consuming, and most of them don't talk to each other, correct? So I definitely appreciate you making that connection and figuring out that just to make it easier for your patients to have this in one place. So let's speak about the nutrition component and as it relates to PCOS, insulin resistance, and weight gain. Not everyone with PCOS has issues with weight. However, and nutrition, as you said earlier, is so important. It's key. Nutrition, stress management, there's so many things that come into play into PCOS, managing PCOS properly. But let's first talk about the nutrition component.
Sure. The as you mentioned, there are women who don't have problems with their weight. And so, you know, the research over the years didn't always recognize that. In fact, at one point, it was considered that a woman, a thin woman, couldn't have PCOS. We have subsequently learned that that's not the case, although there may, again, just be, you know, some differences among the different women in the way they express PCOS. But when we're looking at one of the common features, like insulin resistance, we know many things. It can lead to many symptoms, and we also know that many things will exacerbate insulin resistance. And one of the ways that we try to kind of intervene with the insulin resistance to modify it, if you will, of course, is kind of a certain approach to nutrition. There's also other things, as you mentioned, stress also seems to worsen insulin resistance, increased weight, if it's through, you know, by fat cells or adipose cells, that increases insulin resistance. So there's a number of things, and we wind up in this kind of vicious cycle where, you know, the insulin resistance leads to something that actually worsens the insulin resistance. So we have to kind of intervene somewhere along the line of that vicious cycle and just start someplace. So we may find, as you mentioned, stress. It will have an impact on the adrenal hormones. That can exacerbate insulin resistance. So we may want to do certain things that help to modify stress. It could be meditation. Could be acupuncture, any number of different ways, you know, exercise of just trying to decrease stress that someone might be feeling, and then nutrition, of course, there are different recommendations that we have that will help to try to kind of even out the amount of insulin that's secreted in a way to make someone perhaps more sensitive to their own insulin, so there's not a lot of peaks and valleys of their blood sugar throughout the day.
So now, for example, with nutrition, is there any one approach that works for every woman with PCOS?
I wish that there was an easy answer to that one. We don't think there's one approach. There's certainly some things that generally work better when there is insulin resistance. It's also really important to look at, of course, an individual's preferences, an individual's lifestyle. You know, young women going off to college are presented with a myriad of choices of in terms of foods, but many times if they don't have as much control over what they are exposed to. But, you know, that's a challenging time for young women with PCOS. Women who are working, also very difficult to try and, you know, keep your diet a certain way when you have demanding hours, fit in exercise, things like that. So we have to pay attention when we're giving out any kind of nutrition advice, is exactly what are the challenges that particular individual has. One of the most important things is to know who is that woman living with, you know, who's her support system, are there challenges there in terms of dietary restrictions she might have that aren't shared by her family. So it's just really key to know the social aspect as well, so that you really can come up with a reasonable recommendation. It's just not fair to present with someone with a list that you must do these things if her life is not going to support her ability to do those things. So we need to work within her life. We do know things that can exacerbate or cause big spikes in insulin, and those are things that cause the blood sugar to rise rapidly. And the most commonly recognized items are those that are basically simple carbohydrates, simple sugars. And so as a general guidance, I say that the one thing where you might want to, you know, minimize how much you expose yourself to those things. You know, just know what the ideal is. We're all going to have times when we don't follow the ideal, but best to know the ideal. And for the majority of women with PCOS, I would urge them to try and decrease the simple carbohydrates. The other is not to go too long without eating. So there are a couple things I think are important for everybody who has PCOS.
Yeah. And we don't have that much time left. However, I want to get into the fertility piece. How does PCOS affect a woman's chance of conceiving?
Well, in a couple of different ways. I mean, one of the big ones is that many women with PCOS don't ovulate, they don't release an egg, or they don't release an egg regularly. So right away, they're decreasing the number of chances they would have. And it's possible that they don't release, some women don't release an egg at all. And so just from that alone, we are seeing a decrease in chances of conception. So if somebody ovulates regularly, in essence, that woman has 12 times in over a year's time to conceive. But if a woman with PCOS doesn't ovulate at all, or only ovulates once or twice in 1 year's time, I mean, it has just dramatically reduced her chances of conceiving. The other important thing is, because there is a hormonal imbalance that's occurring, and we can see that in the bloodstream, but it's also at the level of the ovary, and that's where that egg is growing and maturing before it is released. It gets exposed to hormones that may not be ideal for its best outcome. And so even if a woman with PCOS ovulates, that egg may not have been exposed to the right hormones at the right time and may not be very fertilizable or may not be normal. So that's another way that it can affect fertility. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
No, I was going to say, so for, you know, this sounds grim for a lot of women who don't ovulate regularly or the hormones are interfering. How can you improve your chances of conceiving with PCOS or ovulating regularly?
Yes, I mean, there are a number of different approaches, and I would not want to discourage anyone. I would say that it may require some help, of course, but I wouldn't say that it's grim. I think our understanding, fortunately, has improved so much, and it's
great.
Really important to gather the team around you. Insulin resistance plays a role in ovulation. Insulin resistance impacts the ovarian hormones, and then that impacts ovulation. And so trying to follow a good diet that helps decrease your insulin resistance is one of the first steps that someone can take. If a woman is overweight, we may find that having her lose some weight, which may occur very promptly if we are able to follow a good diet that helps to decrease the insulin spikes. Additionally, there are medications that are also very helpful when it comes to ovulation. And so a reproductive endocrinologist, you know, has those medications available and can, you know, prescribe them. And actually many, many, many women respond well to those medications.
Okay. And so when a woman with PCOS does finally conceive, are there any concerns that she may have or for her or her baby? And how can she have a healthy pregnancy and give birth to a child?
You know, there are some very important things to know, and I would preface what I'm about to say by stating that, you know, the studies looking at this, some have controlled for important factors, but there does seem to be some increased risks during pregnancies in women with PCOS. So So there is a higher chance of gestational diabetes. There's an increased risk of preeclampsia, high blood pressure, preterm delivery. And so a woman who has PCOS who conceives should be monitored carefully by her obstetrician. And her obstetrician should be aware that she has these risks and monitor her very closely for them. There are certainly some studies that looked at these risks and didn't also look at the fact that maybe these women were had gone through treatments that led to, say, twin pregnancy, which of course also increases those risks as well. So, but even more recent studies controlling for them found that PCOS by itself did seem to lead to an increased risk of these problems. So a very good obstetrician should be aware of them and monitor her during the pregnancy.
Okay. And I have questions from through all of them, but let's address this one. This lady has had 10 consecutive weeks of bleeding. What causes that, and how can she address that?
So that's something that it'd be extremely important for that woman to see her physician, her gynecologist about that. I always advise women at any time in their life, if they bleed more than 7 days, that should not be considered normal. Even if it happens frequently for them, it's still not considered normal, and their gynecologist should address that. With PCOS, because women continuously make levels of estrogen that are not counterbalanced by progesterone, they can build up the lining of the uterus, and then they can have irregular shedding or irregular bleeding. So they can have this continuous asynchronized bleeding. Generally, when a woman goes through ovulation, she makes estrogen in the first part of her cycle. She releases an egg and starts making progesterone. And then when the progesterone is not made, if she's not pregnant, she sheds the lining of the uterus, but very synchronously, and that's what a period is. But since that balance isn't occurring with women with PCOS, the lining of the uterus can just bleed very unpredictably. But it's also extremely important to know that because there is an imbalance of hormones with estrogen production, that a woman is at risk for precancerous changes in her uterus, something called hyperplasia, and even uterine cancer. And so it's extremely important that if there's this, you know, any kind of prolonged bleeding, that a woman consult her physician.
Unfortunately, we have run out of time, but how can our listeners reach you and learn more about your practice and the wellness and Society Hill Reproductive Medicine?
Well, they can check out our website, www.societyhillrm.com, and they can also reach the wellness by www.thewellnc.st.
Okay, and as you exit the show, can you please just give us your advice, your parting words to any woman or girl who's been diagnosed with PCOS?
I would suggest that woman seeks a team to support her. And if she feels that she's discouraged, that she should find herself another healthcare provider until she feels that she has someone that she can go to with any questions or problems that come up, and who can also advise her and help her approach it in the manner that she is most comfortable. But it is not something that we can't and haven't made great strides in. And so I think the important thing is, you know, not to do it on your own and not to feel like you're alone, and to make sure you just have a good support team of healthcare providers as well as family and friends.
Dr. Maureen Kelly, thank you so much for joining the PCOS Challenge Radio Show and giving us hope on taking control of our lives and living the healthiest lives that we can possible with polycystic ovary syndrome. Thank you so much for all that you do for women with PCOS.
Well, thank you so much, Sasha. Take care.